mean, I'm not a white guy anymore, and I wasn't very good at it when I was trying, so I am just way better with boobs. Like, it distracts you from the dumpster fire.
I thought you were a decent white guy. You're better now.
Couldn't have done better. I did the best I could. Hello and welcome to Gifted Kid Messy Adult, the show where potential went to die. I'm your host, Ellie Michaels. I use she, her.
I am your host, Jessica Michaels. I use she, they. A little more they today.
A little more they today?
More they today.
All right. Feeling a bit more on the end of the spectrum. And today we are talking about stimming. What is stimming, Jess?
So stimming is, and I'm just realizing as I'm saying this, that this is the worst podcast topic ever, because stimming is repetitive, things like repetitive motions. They're repetitive actions. And I think the more we talk about stimming, the more likely you or I are to take on those repetitive actions, which could cause noise. So we're going to need to really train our hands to be quite still. Yes, that is a good idea. But basically,
hands on head, surrender cobra, no moving hands.
Stimming is a way that generally neurodivergent people can kind of counteract either anxiety or sensory input or a lack of sensory input. It's a way to regulate. It's a way to regulate yourself through a repetitive type of motion or action. Could be a sound. So something that you do habitually.
Yeah. And I find often it's something you do it without noticing. I think like the main one that I can think of that you do is you count syllables of sentences by touching each finger to your thumb in sequence.
Yeah, I like when I hear a sentence that has five syllables because I can count on my fingers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or I like it when there's eight because I can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and then do my thumb, my middle finger, and my pinky. That's eight. And it ends on. So I like finding certain number patterns in sentences. And to do that, I often, most of the time, I repeat the sentence in my head unless I feel like it's a really good one. And then I will sometimes, without knowing it, say it out loud, like under my breath, or I'll even get excited and say, that one's 10. And out of nowhere. So hopefully you find that endearing. Otherwise we have problems.
No, I find it very cute. But how's that run into auditory processing issues? Like, you have to catch the whole sentence. And it seems like oftentimes the onset of the sentence is the part that you miss, because I have to like get your attention first and then say the words of the sentence.
Definitely
where like I called you by your name the other day and you were like, you never do that. I'm like, I do that all the time. I just do that to get your attention. And then after that, you start noticing what I'm saying.
Definitely the most commonly uttered phrase, I think, from me in our relationship is what? And then often I will start responding when you're halfway through repeating what you said, because I'm just a little bit delayed there. With the counting of the syllables, often it's sentences that I hear that I'm saying to myself in my head, like my own internal monologue, or as I'm scripting out conversations, which I realize that not everybody does. So it's a very common autistic thing though, is scripting out interactions or imagining interactions that you will have with people and what you will say. So in those instances, when I'm scripting out my conversations, I can you know, hear the whole sentence because it's in my head, and I will count it out. So, but it's not all the time that I miss half the first half of every sentence, just sometimes. So it's usually shorter phrases that I'm, you know, that I'll hear that I'll count out. You do a counting thing too, sort of. You, when you're thinking, you like flick your fingers, or you kind of like, and it does make a sound often, you know, mm-hmm. because it really sounds like, seems like it would be painful, but you do like a hand and finger flick when you are really trying to solve a problem or thinking about something that is not, you know, immediately coming to mind. That's definitely a physicality that you have.
Yeah, it's odd. It's not a flick. I just kind of smack the fingernail of my right ring finger into the fingertip of my middle finger. And it does make a little like snappy, cracky sound. And it tends to be when I'm facing a large amount of data or like information, because mm-hmm. my brain is really good at taking in a lot of data and looking for a pattern in it. So like if I'm looking for a certain kind of chord, I can just look at the big clump and move it around a bit and I'll catch, you know, oh, I need that kind. There it is. But if I'm looking at like an entire row in the grocery store, or if I'm looking at a bunch of racks of clothing or something in a store, I'll tend to do that. And I'm usually not terribly aware that I'm doing it. And I think just the sound of it is just enough of a background noise that it kind of helps me focus on the giant amount of data that I've got going on. And then, yeah, like you said, if I'm trying to figure something out or play it through in my head, because it's very difficult for me to actually imagine images, which is weird because I don't know, I'm also good at images and a professional videographer.
Brains are weird.
But yeah, that one, or like just kind of rubbing the fingertips of my first two fingers across the pad of my thumb. That one doesn't really make a noise, but it's, again, that little bit of background sensation that mm-hmm. cuts through the regular background noise of the brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, stimming is actually short for self-stimulating. And so it is things like, so not just like, I know we both gave hand examples, but it could be like right now I am kicking my leg because I very rarely sit still. I also will turn in my chair. If I'm standing, I'm always rocking back and forth. So it's sort of like being with somebody who's, you know, on a cruise ship because I always have to be moving. But it can also be like echolalia. We have a friend that is a go-to stim for them is echolalia. So saying out loud things from memes or videos or TV shows, just that you know, feel good in the moment, or that feel good to say or sound good. These are all different types of stims. You can, there can also be, though, these are pretty innocuous stims, I think, but there are detrimental stims as well. Do you have any detrimental or physically hurtful stims?
I think my main detrimental one was I used to tap my feet kind of nonstop, and I had to train myself out of that to where now I just kind of twitch my calf muscles, or I'll like alternate between calf and thigh muscles, and I'm doing it right now. Mm-hmm. I tend to do it if I'm excited or I'm trying to, you know, keep myself from talking over you because I've had a lot of caffeine this morning.
You do seem a little amped this morning for sure. So one of the, as I was going back through the process of getting diagnosed for autism, one of the things that I was asked about was repetitive behaviors from when I was between 0 and 3 years old. And that is when I found out that I was a headbanger. Not like, you know, to me, headbanging is a Wayne's World exclusive, you know, something that you do when Bohemian Rhapsody comes on. But apparently what I would do is I would bang my head on the cement floor of our basement. And then that actually kept up for, you know, past my 0 to 3 and into, you know, being school age. And then when I stopped banging my head on the cement floor, I began skin picking, which is something that I still struggle with and is, you know, when I have scars all, you know, covering my arms and my legs. I mean, really my whole body from skin picking. And that's, I think, the thing that I'm most embarrassed about. I wish I didn't do that. And I wish that I didn't have so many scars all over, because I can't really wear short sleeve shorts or a swimsuit without it being very evident that I've had something going on. So, and that I remember getting in a lot of trouble for it when I was young. And yeah, and it just never, the more trouble I got in, the more inclined I was to do it. And it's just never, I've never been able to stop it.
Revenge skin picking. Ooh, I just thought of another one. If you take your finger and put it on the end, the tip of your nose, and push in a little bit, you can kind of feel that your nose is made of two parts, one on the left and one on the right. And there's a little bit of a gap between them if you push in a little bit. And just doing that and wiggling it back and forth and feeling that there's this weird seam in my nose, that's one. That's definitely a thinking one.
I just like thinking that at any point in time, there could be hundreds of people doing this, like in their car, at a red light, because of your suggestion. So that's good. But the whole idea behind stimming is that it makes you comfortable. You know, I know that part of my hyperactive ADHD, because I have combined types, so inattentive and hyperactive. And one of the things about hyperactive ADHD that affects me is that if I need to be still for a period of time, it feels like I am trapped in my body and that I have to escape. So the rocking, you know, or, you know, when I'm in bed and I'm squirming around, you know, just to try to get comfortable, it's because when I have to be still, it starts off uncomfortable and then it just gets unbearable where I have to move. And it's almost a panicky feeling when I can't move or when I need to be still. I'll start hyperventilating. You know, I can work myself into a panic attack just by trying to be still for a particular period of time. So these are ways that people are regulating themselves. And, you know, I think of kids where we're really looking at kids and saying, you know, we're training kind of the behaviors that kids, quote unquote, should have so that they fit in and don't distract others and don't draw attention to themselves. You know, what we're saying to a lot of these kids is, don't make yourself comfortable. Don't regulate. Your job is to sit and deal with the feeling that you need to escape from your body while you also learn to write or spell, and how awful that must be.
No, it's kind of the worst. I have really bad interoception, and then the other one where it's hard to tell what emotions I'm feeling. And so I'm like not terribly aware of what feeling I need to deal with, or like why I feel weird, or what kind of weird. Like there's kind of that, there's like okay and then not okay, and then good. Like, mm-hmm. I can dig down there and, you know, pull up my emotion wheel and figure out what it is I'm actually feeling. But most of the time it seems random and not so much like I'm trapped. I mean, there is the one where I'm trying not to interrupt you constantly. It just seems to happen. And the trying not to do it is much more a matter of not getting in trouble or not annoying people. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not allowed to take up space or exist within other people's sensory experience. It's partially why I walk so quiet and startle the crap out of you on the regular.
Oh my gosh. I scream in just sheer terror like once a week because all of a sudden I forget there's a person right there. Didn't make any noise. And I think part of that the need for self-soothing comes from just a lack of being comfortable in any situation. There's never a time where you feel like, I'm good. This is what I should be doing. This is where I should be. You know, this is what my body should be doing. This is the look I should have on my face. You know, it's you just always feel, or you can always feel, that you are wrong. So you're always at least a little bit uncomfortable. And so taking on those behaviors can make you feel more relaxed in what is a really tense situation. And it's not just neurodivergent people who stim. I think autism, you know, when you think of kind of stereotypically autistic moves, we think of hand flapping. For ADHD, we think of stimming and like pen clicking, you know, can be one. If you have ever been in a meeting with a pen clicker, I applaud you for not committing a crime of any kind, because it's very distracting. But people do a lot. There's a lot of things that we do as people to make our bodies feel comfortable, and not all of them are healthy. This is not just a neurodivergent thing. But if you think about smoking, when I was young or in high school, smoking was definitely a cool thing. You know, it was a grown-up mm-hmm. thing. It was, you know, all the people who were such adults who were 18 and could buy cigarettes. And then as we got into adulthood, though, it was definitely for most people, I think, more of a comfort thing or a mm-hmm. socialization thing, but it was a way to, again, de-stress, to relax, to self-regulate, you know, to regulate your breathing in a terrible way, in like the worst way possible, but it was doing some deep breaths. And, you know, that, so it isn't just these neurodivergent motions or repetitive behaviors that accomplish the same thing. Pen chewing. I know I was a big pen chewer. Yeah, I have since stopped, I think because I had to start paying for my own dental work, and that'll nip that in the bud real quick. But I was definitely a pen chewer. That's, you know, something that people do. I don't think it is just a neurodivergent thing, but I think we talk about it more than neurotypical people. I don't ever remember it coming up unless it was something that I was doing that annoyed my dad, you know, where I was kicking my leg and, you know, he could see it out of
existing
the corner.
Kind of annoyed him. Yeah. With regards to the smoking thing, it was definitely the sensation of the hit in the back of my throat. And I remember when I switched to vaping, and this was, you know, years ago, when to walk around vaping, you needed a rig the size of your hand, you know, something that you could potentially hurt somebody with.
And for people that don't know, like my mother, vaping, can you describe what vaping is? Because I know that there's at least one person on the planet who thinks vaping is just for pot.
Yeah, there's a liquid suspension of nicotine and a handful of other chemicals, and usually some kind of flavor, and you have some kind of electrical resistance coil in that goo, and you throw current through that coil. It heats up and it turns that goo into a vapor that you then inhale, and you could absorb nicotine that way, the same way you can with smoking. But nothing actually burns, and it's not full of a bajillion carcinogens, so it's considerably better for you as a way to ingest nicotine. It's still not great, but it was a way that I could very carefully control the dosage of the nicotine I was taking in, and I could step down like those old commercials for the Nicorette patches or whatever, where the lady is going down these actually really large looking steps. And eventually I was down to, you know, the lowest nicotine content you could get mixed with goo that was actually like zero nicotine. And it was finally that was the point where I could like set it down and walk away. But I had to have a big vape machine, you know, big as they get. Nowadays, you think of like a Juul that's like the size of two of your fingers maybe. And this was a thing the size of my fist. And part of that was I needed the mass amounts of power to have that feeling of the hit in the back of my throat, because that's what felt like. Yeah, that's what I felt like I needed.
I just need to interject. While vaping may arguably potentially be better than smoking, it is not healthy. It is bad for you. And there are serious diseases and up to like lung transplants that people have needed from vaping. So I just want to make sure we're not saying that it's the best thing ever. Everybody should go grab a vape. And the long-term effects are not known at this time. So
hasn't really been around or popular for long enough for us to know what this does. Mm-hmm. And that was also part of the impetus for me to be like, okay, this is something I am doing so I can stop all of this. But going back to stimming, when I found out what stimming was and what purpose it serves for our brains and for our emotional self-regulation, my mind went back to an article I read forever ago about, you know, in many cases, the article was not about the autistic kid. It was about their long-suffering mother and how awful it was to have an autistic kid who wouldn't hug you. And oh, forsooth. And how he had this really specific stim that was the thick green straws from Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
He would chew on those. And I specifically remember that they treated that like a reward or a treat. Mm-hmm. So if this, you know, small kid, you know, primary school kid did his chores and whatever, and then like asked nicely for a green straw, he would get a green straw, but only till like mid morning or lunchtime. And it occurred to me afterwards that not only is this all about the long suffering mother and how awful it is to have an autistic child, but that was like denying that kid something he needed for his own well-being, like physical and emotional well-being. And if that's not how you treat this, that's not like that. It's kind of like saying that your diabetic kid can only have their insulin shot once they've cleaned their room. Like, that's cruel at best and straight up abuse at worst.
I do think it would be very hard to have a child who did not hug you as a parent. And again, we are speaking from the perspective of level one autism, and there's a big difference between level one autism and profound autism, you know, level two and level three, and up to, I think, a quarter of autistics are profoundly autistic. So that would be very tough to deal with as a parent, for sure. So, but I also think that it is very unfortunate for someone who has figured out something that does make them feel better to take that away for no particular reason. I mean, I don't necessarily feel like it's super harmful to, unless the kid's running around with a straw in their mouth or something, you know, I don't think it's certainly not the most harmful thing that a kid could do. I mean, I would rather have a kid chew on a straw than bang their head on the cement floor, which apparently I did enough for it to be like a habit, which is concerning to me. Surely that had no long-term effects whatsoever. That's why I can't do math. That's it. That's why I topped out in third grade on math. Is just one fewer bang to the head, and it would have been calculus. But you know, I just topped out at statistics, unfortunately. So
you do have a very nice flat forehead. So
yeah,
that may have helped that.
I just smashed my head into symmetry. I did some other things too that I always knew that I had these habits, but I looked at them as just habits and not as stimming until I learned about neurodiversity and things. And I was always a fingernail biter. My fingernails were always just down, you know, to the quick, really, because I would just always bite my fingernails. And it would usually be at night when I was trying to sleep. I would bite my nails. And it wasn't until I tried so many things. I tried that bitter nail polish that you put on your fingers, but that was always like, I didn't like it. It was bad, but it wasn't bad enough to make me stop doing it. And I think for me, that's how I can tell that it was a little bit more than just a habit, because I really needed to get that needing that feeling of calm that it gave me was more important. Like if I had to deal with a little bit of bitter taste to do that, I mean, it was like the fingernail equivalent of taking a shot, you know. I'm like, okay, this is what I got to do to get the buzz. Then that is what I will do. Once I learned that, okay, this is a stim and there are other stims that I could substitute, or, you know, other things that I can do that give me the same effect without biting my fingernails, I've finally gotten just to the point, like, I think I just said it like this week or last week to you, that like my nails are finally growing, you know, to the point where you can really tell that I haven't been biting them, and you know, look like I could actually get my nails done if that were something that I was at all inclined to do, which I don't know. I'm just not usually, but sometimes.
Well, first off, excellent out of you. Thank you. Well done with that. And the other one is that I'm weirdly proud that I was never a nail biter, because like other people in my family were, and it was, you know, one of those things that you would get swatted for. Not like a team of cops in armor would show up, more like a, you know, hit on the hand or something from authority figures who just really wielded that power wisely. Oh. So yeah, I was weirdly proud of the fact that I never bit my nails, and that wasn't really something I picked up. And then the other related piece of information that has nothing to do with anything, but I'll explode if I don't say it, is that when the Nintendo Switch first came out, they made a big deal about how their games were these little itty bitty cartridges about the size of an SD card, but they specifically made them out of a type of plastic that tasted bad so that kids wouldn't swallow these little game cartridges. And I specifically remember, I think it was on the Daily Tech News show, that the guy like was like, all right, I'm going to test this, and put a game cartridge in his mouth and went, yeah, not that bad.
That's exactly what I would have done. Exactly what I would have done.
It's exactly like when we were trying to get your makeup off and found out that you can't put an alcohol swab on your eyelid. And you went, oh, that burns. And I went, does it? And then I immediately did it to myself and went, oh, that burns.
You just gotta know. You gotta know. But there are other, I think, you know, it is a sensation-seeking thing in some way. I mean, part of it is, you just want to know. You want to know what that feeling is. It's not that you didn't believe that it hurt. It's just you wanted to know, really, how badly. Like, what does that actually feel like? Mm-hmm. But we can use this in, there are, like, if you go, one of my favorite things is going to, like, museums or places where they have, like, barrels or boxes of things for you to stick your arms into, like corn or like sand, or like children's museums used to have a lot of these things. Oh, I absolutely loved those. And I think it's a combination of pressure and texture, because I'm a big texture stim person, fortunately for the dog. The dog is a really good petting. The dog is a really good stim for me, and so I can just sit and watch you and pet the dog for hours, because that just really, really calms me down. Really, more than it calms him down. Sometimes he's kind of done with it. But, you know, that's a cool one. But also even things like, you joke about being attracted to shiny things. You know, that you're a bird. Looking at shiny things, things that are visually pleasing. So looking at patterns, or looking at, you know, shiny things. When we got married and I had my fake diamond ring, one of my favorite things to do was just look at how my ring caught the light. And I still love doing that. The ring's still fake, but just seeing how they sparkle and how they catch the light, that kind of stuff is fun. So if you're a person who is attracted to shiny things, or likes sparkle, or those kinds of things, then, you know, who knows, that might be a way that your body is actually regulating itself and helping you feel better. So buy the glittery thing, you know, glitter's bad for the environment. So buy the shiny thing that is, you know, safe for the world, I guess. But
get the lab grown shiny thing.
Buy the lab grown, but not fossil fuel using shiny thing. Is there such a thing?
Yeah, probably. Yes. You'll burn enough energy trying to find it that the fossil fuels made to generate your power will probably offset the lack of fossil fuels made to make your shiny thing. But sparkly stuff is definitely something that my appreciation for has shifted after starting hormones. Like, now sparkly things are pretty great and very beautiful, whereas before they held no sway over me at all. Mm-hmm. So now, like, I really will enjoy looking at a sparkly thing and looking at how the light changes as it moves around. And that just wasn't a thing before. So that's fun.
So how do we, or what do we suggest people do with this knowledge? We know that stimming is a thing and that everybody stims. Is there anything positive or constructive that we can use this knowledge for?
Well, I think definitely we could try to counteract the conditioning that we all had, that you must not do these things because they're disruptive or they're just annoying to other people. I mean, don't annoy other people. Try not to. But if you do a thing that's, you know, a physical stimulation that helps you self-regulate and helps you stay calm or helps you think or whatever, just go for it. Enjoy it. Let yourself need it and let yourself do it. Because a lot of us were so conditioned to not do these things that we have negative connotations to them. And, you know, the idea that maybe I need this is a weakness, or it's a problem with me, or something that needs to be solved. And it's like, no, it's just part of how your brain works. Is sometimes you need this little extra hit of sensory information, the same way that some people, you know, really need music to be playing to clean their apartment, or need a weighted blanket to sleep well, or a fan on to sleep well. It's okay to have preferred sensory input for your life to be better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay that you can't wear that certain kind of material for socks, and you shouldn't force yourself to wear those kinds of socks. Just wear the kinds that you like.
It's amazing now, because I just read a book on positive intelligence, which is basically it's a certain way of looking at some mindfulness activities. And a lot of the mindfulness activities that they recommend are things that are also stims. Like they recommend, like, rubbing your two fingers together very slowly so you can, like, feel the ridges on your fingers and really concentrating on that. And that is a mindfulness activity. And it's like, yeah, that's also a stim. So these are things that can be used to put yourself in a good mental state, as well as, you know, as well as regulating your breathing and your body. So, you know, if you're swaying, you know, back and forth, like really you can concentrate for a little bit on what that feels like what is that giving you? What do you feel as you're doing that? What are you letting go of? What are you what are you gaining? So I definitely think you can lean into the positives of stimming. You can also, if you find yourself getting really antsy in certain situations, like in meetings, or if you're sitting watching TV and you're getting antsy, see if it helps to just, you know, get to the back of the room and walk around a little bit, or, you know, or sway a little bit, or do some hand flapping. And, you know, you don't know what your body likes if it's not something you've ever let yourself do. And so I think, yeah, give yourself some permission to be, you know, trusting your body with telling you what it needs, even if it's a little silly looking or a little weird. We can all do some stimming. Don't bang your head against the floor. I think that's the ask I'm gonna have. Don't do that. Don't do that.
And one quick final thought. I think it's kind of funny that we're using mindfulness activities, specifically like the finger rubbing kind of thing. I was always taught that in the context of it's a way to help train your concentration. And much like the idea of when you're meditating, you focus on your breath and then your mind wanders. And then you make the effort to bring your attention back to the breath. And every time you do that, it's like doing a right arm curl with a weight, but for your ability to pay attention, for your capacity for focus. And when you're doing the finger rubbing thing and trying to focus on those sensations as a stim, it almost feels like the opposite, where I'm trying to take up some of my attention with this so that the rest of my attention can focus on what I'm actually trying to do, which I guess is maybe just more of like attention cardio than attention weightlifting. Still good for you. That's the whole point. Well, I think that'll just about wrap up this episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. If you like our show and would like to support us, it would be great if you could find us, rate us, and review us on Apple Podcasts. And you can also subscribe on YouTube. Leave some comments and ratings and likes on that one. If you would like to straight up support us, you can find our Patreon page at Coach Jessica Michaels. The link will be in the show notes. And right now, you're going to be getting some reviews of some really fun books that you and I both enjoy. Hoping to not quite make that into a spin-off podcast where we just talk about Terry Pratchett for an hour at a time. But it might eventually get there. And if people want to support you, Jess, where can they find you?
CoachJessicaMichaels.com. I have information about things like my Udemy course that was recently published, all about supporting neurodiversity in the workforce, and all of the fun things that I am doing out and about supporting neurodiversity.
Cool. And you can find me at elliemichaelsproductions.com if you would like some B2B specialized video, if you would like some B2B specialized promotional video taken care of. I don't even have to do the filming. You can do the filming and I'll just do the editing because I actually like to edit.
Weird.
Well, I mean, I just like sitting and watching the same bit of video over and over and over and making slight tweaks to things I notice that bother me.
You might be neurodivergent.
The devil you say. I think that'll wrap it up for this episode. Until next time, take care of each other out there.
Bye.